Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by AFSCME People, AFSCMEPeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
American Giant makes great clothing, T-shirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S., creating jobs in towns and cities across the country. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm John Hodge, joined by J.C. Abbott. Justin Dunk is off today. J.C., we have been getting inundated with comments, texts, tweets, everything about the sword that is implanted into your head in the backdrop of your podcast. Before we get into the rundown today, because you got a ton of CFL to talk about, a little bit of youth sports, a little bit of NFL perhaps, we need to know what is going on with the sword that is embedded in your skull, because our YouTube viewers desperately want to know.
This is going to sound really nerdy, Hodge. This is a replica long claw from Game of Thrones, Jon Snow's sword. I got it as a gift a number of years ago, and I don't have a lot of good places in my house to record this, so I'm like jammed in a corner, and that happens to be where I also hang Longclaw, so it is behind me as a backdrop here.
And Longclaw is the name of this particular sword, or is it the name of like that variety of sword?
No, it's the name of this particular sword. It's a Valyrian steel sword.
Okay, I get down with Harry Potter. I don't know Game of Thrones. Lord of the Rings a little bit, just the movies. I don't like Lord of the Rings books, though I've tried to read them many, many, many times. So big Game of Thrones. Have you read the books, the Game of Thrones books?
I did not read the books, but I was a big fan of the show when it was on, and have some memorabilia. I have many, many nerdy interests, particularly in the realm of television. So.
Okay,
that was one of my obsessions at the time, and most of the time I just obsess over football. But when football's not on, you got to find something else to watch, right?
This is true, and I say that the sword there I think is a great excuse, because that way when you make picks that are bad and don't make any sense, you could say, "Well, it's not my fault. I've got a sword that's wedged into the back of my skull. Long claw, is that what it's called? I have long claw,
yeah.
In my cranial nerve right now. Without further ado, let's get right into it. Today, we're discussing Chad Kelly and Logan Bonner throwing a combined 9 interceptions this past week.
Possible renovations coming to Commonwealth Stadium in Edmonton.
Whether or not the Hamilton Tiger Cats can still make the playoffs.
Yet another late-season Saskatchewan Rough Riders collapse.
The retirement of Aaron Grimes.
And two teams making a push to host the 2026 Grey Cup. But first, for the second straight week, Saskatchewan Rough Riders defensive tackle Miles Brown delivered a controversial hit on Winnipeg Blue Bombers quarterback. In the Labor Day Classic, Brown hit the head of quarterback Zach Kolaros, which drew a penalty and subsequently a fine. This past weekend in the Banjo Bowl, he hit Chris Streveler low while the dual threat passer was delivering a surprise pass on second and two, which drew a penalty for roughing the passer. Streveler was unable to return to the game and was hobbling on crutches postgame. Hodge, was this a dirty hit from Brown?
I don't think it's a dirty hit. I think it's an unfortunate hit. And I think that the notoriety of Miles Brown, right, from the Drew Brown hit from earlier this year, the Zach Collaros hit last week, and now the Streveler hit, is going to unfairly paint him in the minds of some fans as a dirty player. I went around the Bombers locker room post-game. I think I asked 8 different players about this hit. Brady Oliveira, Zach Collaros. Zach Collaros didn't comment on the hit. Brady did. Brady said it wasn't dirty. Nick Dembski didn't see the hit, but said Saskatchewan's not a dirty team. I talked to Patrick Neufeldt, who's gone up against Miles Brown a ton of times over the last 3 years. He said Miles is not a dirty player. So I don't think this was a dirty hit. I did also, by the way, talk to Kendall Randolph. I believe I was the only member of the media who did. The rookie out of the University of Alabama, I believe, was the offensive lineman on the block. And I asked him, hey, what was your take? Did you push him into Chris Streveler? Were you hugging him and trying to pull him back from Chris Streveler? And he basically said, I have to watch the film to be sure. So it was kind of a non-answer from Kendall Randolph. But at the end of the day, the context is important. Right. This was a 2nd-and-2 play. Miles Brown, along with all of Saskatchewan's defensive front, was expecting a short yardage play. That is not what happened. Chris Streveler had a surprise drop back to pass. Kenny Lawler was the only receiver charging downfield. Streveler ended up lobbing the ball up. So I do think it was a penalty. Like, when you watch the play, the hit was to the knee. Mike O'Shea did also confirm that, in his opinion, it was to the knee. I got inundated with tweets from Rider fans showing that the hit might have started a fraction of an inch above the knee. And fair enough, it might have struck some portion of Chris Streveler's thigh. But the width of a shoulder pad, especially for someone the size of Miles Brown, is going to be, I would guess, in and around 10 inches wide. So if you strike 2 inches above the knee, that means that the bottom, you know, 8 to 10 inches or whatever it is, the exact width of the shoulder pad is going to be hitting the knee. I do believe it was a hit to the knee. The injury was to Chris Streveler's knee. Adding insult to injury, this was the first game this year that Chris Streveler's fiance was in attendance. And I was in the tunnel post game outside the locker room, and he was on crutches. She came, found him. They embraced, and he just put his head on her shoulder, and they stood there like that for, it must have been close to 30 seconds. He was clearly devastated. He was obviously incensed on the field. But post-game, we don't have an official update on the injury. I would imagine it's season-ending, but that is speculation on my part based on seeing the injury live and then seeing Chris Streveler's response afterwards. This is also a player who played the West semifinal with a broken foot back in 2019. So I don't think you ever rule Chris Streveler out. But I don't think it's a dirty hit, and I don't think it's a dirty play from Miles Brown. But last week was a dirty play, and I do think that there is a lesson for defensive players in this league, which is that if you do something dirty one time, you will maybe no longer get the benefit of the doubt from fans, from officials, from members of the media. Whether that's fair or unfair, it's just life. So I don't think this was a dirty hit. I do think it was a penalty, but I can also see why fans are upset with Miles Brown.
Yeah, I think the only people that have been less lucky than Miles Brown have been the quarterbacks he's hurt this season, because I don't think either of the low hits that he's been guilty of against Drew Brown a few weeks ago, against Streveler here, are really his fault, right? His job is to fire off the line there, get low on the first one against Ottawa. He gets tripped up, very clearly tries to avoid rolling into the knee on that one. On this occasion, it's a short yardage play, right? As a defensive tackle, your job is just bury your head and go forward. If you're not going to get blocked up, like, it's hard to stop the momentum of a 300-pound man when he's trying to lunge forward like that. Now, it's obviously a penalty, right? That happens irregardless of intent or context. But I don't think it's an example of somebody trying to take out somebody else's knees, which a lot of fans suggested on social media. Obviously, the week before was a lapse in judgment by Brown, penalized accordingly, in my estimation, by the CFL. And he's going to get a reputation because, you know, once is a one-off, you know, two, is it a coincidence? Three, it becomes a bit of a trend, and that's what people are suggesting here with Miles Brown. They're not going to ever give him the benefit of the doubt, but I think this was a situation of him getting unlucky and the players he's going up against getting unlucky. I wonder, Hodge, if Strevler is out long term, where you see the Bombers going with that quarterback position?
I mean, that's a great question. Eric Berrier, who was with the team in training camp, is a free agent following his release from the Saskatchewan Roughriders. That being said, he was awful right in the preseason, as much as he was a very highly sought after college player, right? Tremendous collegiate career at Eastern Washington, a school that has produced a number of very talented CFL quarterbacks. However, I think if you're the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, Terry Wilson, I think, is the guy you're looking at as your future. I don't think you're looking for a guy who, you know, you're necessarily wanting to come in and run the offense. Like, Chris Trevler did start a game this year. It's clear that the Bombers greatly shortened their playbook for that one. They also did the same thing in the Labor Day Classic when he played the second half in place of an injured Zach Collares. I think Taylor Cornelius is an option for this team. I have a note out to Taylor's agent. I've yet to hear back. I also wonder if Mason Fine could be an option, though obviously Mason Fine, from a build and role perspective, would not fill the same kind of maybe formula or pattern that the kind of template that the Bombers are looking for. Taylor Cornelius, a guy who's, you know, 6'3", 6'4", a solid 230, 235, is right in that mold, a guy who can run the short yardage, who can take those hits. That is a player who I would look to potentially as someone who could replace Chris Trevler. But again, I have yet to hear back. So I don't even know if Taylor Cornelius is looking to continue playing professional football or if he's willing to come back to the CFL after what I would imagine was a pretty negative experience with the Edmonton Elks. He hasn't done any media since he was cut this offseason, so we don't really know where he's at from that side of it. But the other thing I want to touch on, JC, is, you know, again, fairly or unfairly, Miles Brown is going to be called a dirty player. Again, I will say that is unfair. But I did think that the Riders, and this maybe gets into a little bit of their struggles as of late, right? They're winless in 7 with a tie, 0-6-1. They should have won that game in Ottawa. They probably should have won a couple of these other games they've lost. Jameer Thurman, what are you doing? Right? He tackles Brady Oliveira out of bounds in the Banjo Bowl. They're well over the sideline. And for seemingly no reason, Jameer Thurman shoves him to the ground and takes a penalty for objectionable conduct. Habakkuk Baldonado, nailed that name, by the way, defensive end, is in for an injured Malik Kearney. And he rips Brady Oliveira to the ground while he's out running a passing route and gets flagged for for illegal contact on a receiver. And then after the game, right tackle Eric Lofton of Winnipeg tweeted that Baldonado spat on him. Now, that's obviously just an allegation. That's not confirmed. But I don't think that if you're the Riders, right, and you want to avoid this label of, well, we're a dirty team. And again, to a man in Winnipeg's locker room, from the people I talked to, none of them said they were dirty. But these are chippy things that are costing you penalty yards in a game where you are playing in hostile territory, right? The Banjo Bowl is probably the loudest game of the season in the CFL. And that's probably including Grey Cup, which is traditionally played, of course, in front of a mostly neutral audience. You can't give up these yards. And I wonder if part of maybe the extracurricular activity, we'll call it, from the Riders stems from the fact that it's been so long since they won and tempers there are starting to boil over.
Yeah, and this was a trend when they were losing the last 2 years as well, right? Finishing the season with 7 straight losses in both 2022 and 2023, penalties were a major issue. They were one of the least disciplined teams in the CFL, and that was supposed to change under Corey Mace's leadership. It looked like it had when they were flying high through that early stretch of the season, but now everything that could possibly go wrong for the Saskatchewan Roughriders seems to be going wrong again, right? It's that self-fulfilling prophecy where they've got these opportunities to win these games, but the mistakes just pile up right? They should not be in the situation that they're in. Now, the good thing, if you're a Riders fan, and I think a lot of people who are wearing green and white in the province of Saskatchewan aren't seeing a lot of good things these days. But if you just want to calm yourself and think about this season as a whole, most of the West Division has gone through a stretch like this, right? The Winnipeg Blue Bombers were left for dead early in the season. So were the Edmonton Elks. Both of those teams are surging now. The BC Lions just came off a 5-game losing streak where it looked like they were headed to the basement. You're in that version of your slump right now. And based on the way those other three teams have turned it around and are playing now, there's nothing stopping you from doing the same thing to end this season. But it's got to happen now, right? Because the playoff race is getting tight. Something has to trigger in these coming weeks for the Saskatchewan Roughriders if they want to make the postseason and not miss it for the third straight year.
I think the Riders, I mean, they're on a bye right now. I don't think teams ever want to go into a bye off a loss, much less off a losing streak. So that's going to be tough. But the advantage is when they come back, they're playing the Calgary Stampeders, a team that has completely and utterly fallen and cannot get up. They need a life alert at this point to call an ambulance because nobody is coming to help them or save them, and they are completely unable to help or save themselves. So I can tell you right now, spoiler alert, I'm picking the Calgary, or picking against the Calgary Stampeders next week. I think the Riders will end this streak. And one thing I want to say too, JC, is maybe we owe Craig Dickinson a bit of an apology, right? This team lost the Labor Day Classic in 2022. And then lost the rest of the season, right? They started that year 3-1. They started the season 4-1, lost their last 7 games, missed the playoffs. 2023, they win the Labor Day Classic and then lose out from there. They started that year 3-1, lost their last 7. Well, 2024, and I remember saying this on this very show close to the beginning of the year, I think Corey Mace is going to be a very good CFL head coach. I thought he was a great hire. I still think he's a great hire. I think he will win a Grey Cup in Saskatchewan. That being said, do you remember back to the narrative at the start of this year where people were saying, wow, it's amazing how Corey Mace has changed the culture here? And I remember going, am I taking crazy pills? How does like a 3-1 start constitute a culture change, a 4-1 start, a 5-1 start? And To be fully fair to Saskatchewan, they had to overcome losing their starting quarterback for 6 games, which obviously is tough for any team. That being said, Shea Patterson got 2 wins and a tie while he was at the helm. They've now had Trevor Harris back for a month, and they've lost all 4 of those games. Now, all 4 were close, and they had some tough games in there, right? They had to play Montreal, they had Toronto in there, and they had Winnipeg twice. That's not an easy schedule. But that's 4 losses in a row with your starting quarterback who, you know, at the end of the day has played well, right? He's had 1 stinker in the 4 that he's played. Other than that, he's been very good. I thought he was excellent in the Labor Day Classic. And Trevor Harris, 2 picks aside, was still very solid in the Banjo Bowl, especially getting the ball out as quickly as he did behind what is a very banged up offensive line. But at the end of the day, this team is in the exact same boat it was the last few years. The only difference is because the losing started earlier, they still have some time, right, to get this fixed. And if Corey Mace has changed the culture in Saskatchewan, right, if he is the genius head coach that he was reported to be after the first month of the season, then presumably he will be able to help usher in a winning streak here and help his team get to the playoffs, which, again, they're in a good position to make the playoffs still. If the season ended today, they'd be the 3rd seed in the West Division. But you mentioned how good BC and Winnipeg are playing. How good is Edmonton playing right now? Right? Edmonton has been sensational. The Riders are going to be in a dogfight to win a playoff spot. And I'm curious to see if they can do it. Because right now it's been the tale of 2 halves, right? The first half of their season was incredible. The second half so far has been bad. There's that last third that's yet to come. I want to see what they do.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Chad Kelly and Logan Bonner threw a combined 9 interceptions this past week as their respective teams got blown out in key divisional games. Which of the two performances was worse?
Well, I'm sure we're going to talk a lot about Chad Kelly in this segment, but to me, the clear and obvious answer was Logan Bonner. And I respect that it was his first career CFL start and that some of the interceptions were him trying to make things happen in a game that was out of reach. But I didn't see really anything from my perspective in that game that shows that he's going to be the guy going forward. Can he change that in the next couple weeks if he gets another start or two? Potentially. I think there's some arm talent there. He's got some zip on his throws. But the Calgary Stampeders made a bold change this week, benching Jake Mayer, who, you know, we criticize regularly on this podcast, but at the end of the day is at the very least a competent CFL passer, right? Run of the mill, you can win games with him. And Logan Bonner came in and threw 5 interceptions in his debut with some bad ones. And frankly, I don't think was giving this team the spark that you'd expect from a new quarterback or from a young quarterback. He's not particularly mobile. There was just not a lot there in my estimation. So I was disappointed in that. I'll be interested to see what Calgary does going forward. If Matthew Schiltz is healthy and he gets on the field, if they go back to Mayer, if they run with Bonner, I think this is a lost season for the Stamps at this point. I think their long playoff streak is going to end at the end of 2024. The question now is, what do they do at the most important position going forward, and how are they going to use these last few weeks to figure it out?
If you look at these two performances in a vacuum, it's obvious that objectively the worst one was Logan Bonner, right? And that's not unexpected. He is a first-time starter. And by the way, though the results were not there, first of all, I think Jake Mayer loses this game anyway. Secondly, I commend the Calgary Stampeders for doing something bold, right? They could have trotted Jake Mayer out there and lost by, you know, probably 1 or 2 scores. Instead, they decided to roll with the wild card, which was Logan Bonner. You throw him in the deep end, right? Every quarterback, every professional player, I think, but certainly quarterback, at some point needs to have the training wheels taken off, the water wings taken off, You have to take off the bubble wrap and you have to throw them in the deep end of the pool. You got to push them into the road. You got to do whatever and just see how they respond. Because some guys look unbelievable, right? It's like, holy smokes, this guy has never looked this good in practice. And now when the bullets are flying for real, he somehow got better. Like you could never have predicted that. And some guys, it's the exact opposite, right? They look unbelievably good in practice. And then the game starts and there's nothing there, right? And they are just unbelievably struggling. And so I think that it's important to get to that moment. Logan Bonner's been with this team since the start of 2023. I think that's a reasonable timeline to expect a guy to make their first career start. And I think there's still some good stuff in Calgary. Like that offensive line's okay, though it's a little banged up. The receiving core, I think, is pretty good. They've got something of a run game. And Edmonton is not the toughest place to play, though they did have a solid crowd, which we'll talk about a little bit later on in the show. It wasn't a good performance. That being said, I think if you look at the context of the start and the context of the game, I'd almost argue Chad Kelly's was worse. Yes, he threw for almost 500 yards. Yes, he had three touchdown passes. He also dropped back to pass 56 times. Like, I hope the ice bath was ready for Chad Kelly post-game, because 56 dropbacks in a game is unbelievable. The reason I say it's worse is because this team is going to the playoffs, unlike the Calgary Stampeders, but they were looking to host a playoff game. And had they won this game, they'd be right there with Ottawa at 7 wins, 1 point back because the Red Blacks have a tie on the season. Instead, they are now 5 points back heading into the final third of the season. And these two teams only play twice, which means that the point differential is massively important. Not only did Chad Kelly not put his team in a position to win this game, but he was the reason they got blown out, right? You can't throw two pick sixes in the first quarter and not take a large share of the blame for getting blown out. And the fact that you got smoked in a normal circumstance doesn't matter, right? Because at the end of the day, the point differential doesn't matter. This against a divisional opponent where you are in a dogfight for them to host a playoff game, and you only play them two times, the point differential does matter. So, again, objectively, the worst performance was Logan Bonner. But when you look at the context, the expectations, the factors surrounding the game, I would almost be tempted to say it was Chad Kelly. You can't, like he was sailing that football for the first half, giving the Red Blacks all kinds of chances, and they took full advantage. Credit, by the way, to Damon Webb. Two pick sixes in a game, pretty exceptional.
Yeah, only the eighth time in CFL history that a player has accomplished that particular feat. I agree with you, Hodge, that in the context of the loss and what it means, that Kelly's is more impactful. But I think Ben Grant, our wonderful contributor out of Toronto, did an excellent job in his article this week sort of breaking down those interceptions and pointing out that while Chad Kelly may have struggled a little bit with the wet football, he got unlucky on some of those. And I think we all know I'm not a Chad Kelly apologist, not somebody who's, you know, going to be cheering loudly for him going forward. But I do think he was a little bit unfairly criticized for some of this, some bad luck. Some balls sailed on Drew Brown, too. It's just Toronto couldn't capitalize on those, or he got lucky and they fell to the turf. Unfortunately for Kelly, his balls ended up in the hands of guys like Damon Webb, who made his team pay for it early. And when things got out of reach early in that game, they couldn't crawl or claw their way back into it. I was a little bit fascinated after the game with some of the comments by Ottawa Redblacks strong side linebacker Darius Pickett, who we all know was with the Argos last year, because he compared this Kelly performance, I believe somewhat unfairly, to the East Final last year, when Kelly again threw four interceptions, also had a fumble and got stopped in short yardage in that game. I think that was the comparison that a lot of people were making online. I don't think that's fair, because in that East Final, there was nothing going right. Chad Kelly was dead in the water once things started going wrong. I thought he put up a respectable second half, right? A lot of garbage time yards, sure, but the Argos became competitive down the stretch, even if it wasn't enough for them to get over the top. top and stage a large comeback. But Pickett's comments about Kelly and also about his head coach or his former head coach, Ryan Dinwiddie, were certainly interesting. What did you make of those, Hodge?
Well, I mean, first of all, credit to Claire Hanna for doing this interview. It was an exclusive with TSN postgame. And credit to Adarius Pickett for not being afraid to speak his mind, right? He seemed upset that the Toronto Argonauts didn't reach out to him personally last offseason when he was a free agent. I spoke to Mr. Pickett at the CFL Awards availability last year, where he was donning a custom-made Toronto Adarius Pickett jacket that he had made. And for a guy who started his career with the Montreal Alouettes, I don't think felt fully appreciated in Montreal, and then suddenly really hit his stride with the Toronto Argonauts, earning the East Division's Most Outstanding Defensive Player Award nomination. I think he found himself in a situation where he's like, great, I've got the perfect situation for me. This team loves me back. This is where I can really make a legacy and build a career. And according to Pickett, he never once the entire offseason heard from head coach Ryan Dinwiddie. Now, in fairness to the Argos, to at least some extent, his defensive coordinator from last year, Corey Mace, is now the head coach in Saskatchewan. But one would think that when you have an award level player, right, a truly dominant, I would call Adarius Pickett a top five defensive player in the CFL, you'd certainly think that at the very least, even if you're not confident you're going to be able to retain him in free agency, you make the call. And according to Pickett, that didn't happen. Now, we haven't heard Ryan Dinwiddie's side of the story. We haven't heard from Pinball or John Murphy or any of the people in the personnel department for Adarius Pickett or for Toronto regarding Adarius Pickett. But yeah, it's not a good look. And credit to Adarius again for speaking his mind. I will also say Chad Kelly now, through his handful of starts with the Toronto Argonauts, three starts, he's got four touchdown passes, six picks. I don't think that's what anybody expected from Chad Kelly. He looked good in game one, right? If you ever expected him to look bad, you'd expect, okay, well, game one, he's knocking off the rust. We'll see what he does. He was very good. I thought in that first game against Saskatchewan, he was not great against Hamilton last week. He was terrible, I thought, through at least the first half of that game against Ottawa. Credit to him for making adjustments in the second half. But again, the damage was done. It simply wasn't what it needed to be.
Social media was set ablaze last week following news that Commonwealth Stadium could be getting some extensive renovations. Hodge, do you think we'll see the 56,000 seat venue get some upgrades anytime soon?
No, not at all. And look, I'm going to get on a bit of a soapbox here, and I'm sorry for that, but one of my least favorite things about social media is the way that a post can garner all kinds of attention, despite the fact that it's really devoid of any context. I spoke to the city of Edmonton once the images, the spec images, the mock-ups of a renovated Commonwealth Stadium started going around online. And by the way, these images are very impressive. Like, the concourses look great. The glass replacing the large metal sheeting that's covering a lot of the exterior is great. The washrooms look great. And I mean, yes, obviously Commonwealth Stadium could use an upgrade. That's all great. However, when I spoke to the city of Edmonton late last week, they informed me that these images were posted to their website in January. So this was presented almost, or at least it was implied in the posting of these photos on social media that, oh, this is a new thing that's just happened and everyone should know about it. Well, it's not a new thing. This is 9 months old. And to me, that matters a lot, because if the city is really confident that this is going to happen, they call a press conference and show these off. What I was informed by this individual who I spoke with through the city of Edmonton, the spokesperson, is they said an investment of $250 million in capital upgrades and improvements is what is needed to have this done. And right now, the amount of finances that they have secured for this project is literally $0. They're open to going the private route. Good luck getting money from private people to fix a 50-year-old building. Or they're open to talking to all three levels of government, which is the route I would imagine they'll need to take if, in fact, they want to get this done. And maybe the promise of hosting a Grey Cup in the future could help this happen, but who knows? I'm not saying this is never going to happen, and I think it's a great idea, because the city of Edmonton, I asked them point blank, is there any discussion whatsoever about the construction of a new stadium, which is something that Rick Lalisher, the team's current president, has talked about. It's something that Larry Thompson talked about a little bit. That's the new owner of the team. And they said flatly no. Like, there is no conversation, no consideration towards a new stadium at this time. So again, I like this idea, but right now this is very much an idea. This is a concept. It doesn't appear that there is any traction whatsoever that this could become a reality, which leads me to believe that if it does in fact happen, this is probably a like 10-year timeline for the city of Edmonton. Please do not be under the impression that this, again, was brand new. And please don't be under the impression that you're going to be able to go to a game at Commonwealth Stadium in like 2026 and have this building look like this. If it ever gets done, it's going to take a tremendous amount of capital. And none of that has been secured. $0, JC, $0.
Full kudos to you, Hodge, because it would have been very easy when these images and this story started circulating on social media to just do up a simple post and say this is something that's happening. You did your due diligence. You did your deep dive and your digging. You talked to the right people. And I think you bring vital, vital context to this conversation, because the reality is, if 9 months in you have $0 of funding on a $250 million project, it's probably not happening, right? As much as I'd love to see Commonwealth Stadium get spruced up, this seems like a bit of a long shot. And Larry Thompson has talked about the need for renovations or a new stadium and has suggested maybe he'll put his own capital into that project if needed, but he doesn't have just $250 million lying around, right? He's a very wealthy man. He's not footing the cost for all of that. There needs to be government funding for that type of project. And right now, it's hard to believe that there's going to be a lot of appetite for that, particularly if this has been sitting on the shelf since January. It's unfortunate, right, that this is the situation we find ourselves in. And I'm sure it's disappointing for fans in Edmonton who would like this stadium to get spruced up. But we need to be realistic about these types of projects. And unless you've got somebody who's willing to do it themselves, then it's a political issue, right? And you've got to drive the conversation for funding at the voter level and make sure that your elected representatives, whether that's municipal or provincial or federal, know that this is something that you care about. And if it's not, then you got to deal with the poor bathrooms and the old seating. That's just the reality. You can't have it both ways.
Well, the seating is only a little over 10 years old. And I will give full credit to those in charge. And it is a city-owned facility, so it's not the Elks necessarily doing these things. But, you know, in 2018, the luxury suites were renovated. They got a new video ribbon board in 2016, new turf in 2015. Mind you, in today's world, 10 years is probably the length you want. So that's probably due for another redo relatively soon. The new Jumbotron was put in place in 2014, and the new seats were put in when they renovated the locker rooms in 2013. So they have continued to throw layers and layers of lipstick on the pig that is Commonwealth Stadium. If they do all of these upgrades, I dare say Commonwealth Stadium will no longer be a pig. It could be a very nice venue. I know some people don't like the track that distances the field from the seats. And I know some people have criticized the very kind of low angled slope of the seats, which kind of, you know, remove fans from the action, maybe more so than you'd optimally want. But that being said, the fact that, again, the city reiterated that there is absolutely no conversation about a new building, to me, means that they have no plans to replace Commonwealth. I think their solution to the problem that is the size of Commonwealth is what Rick Lalisher has done, which is you tarp off the upper bowl of the stadium. It's the same thing he did when he was the president of BC, right? Focus on selling out the lower bowl. And then for special games like Grey Cup, obviously, playoff games, if the Edmonton Elks ever host one again, or, you know, Labor Day Classic rematch, which, by the way, I just want to say this really quickly. The Labor Day rematch is such a lame name for the game between Edmonton and Calgary. They need to brand that thing Shout out to Jerry Maslowski, who came up with the name Banjo Bowl. Yes, it was derived from a quote from Troy Westwood, but there was a very smart individual in the Bombers organization that capitalized on that and branded it. I think the Edmonton Elks need to do the exact same thing in Calgary. The name Labor Day Rematch is boring and it's lifeless. Make it its own thing. Call it the Alberta Bowl and create an obnoxious trophy in the shape of the province of Alberta. Or do something. Something. I don't care what. Call it something.
I've got an idea, Hodge. We pick them against each other. It's the Stadium Bowl, and whoever wins gets the provincial funding to renovate their ancient venue.
Well, that's actually not a bad idea, though it's a little unfair because Commonwealth is deserving of upgrades, whereas McMahon Stadium is deserving of nothing. Nothing.
Deserving of dynamite. That's what
it is. Deserving of dynamite and a new building, which hopefully the Calgary Stampeders get at some point. I genuinely hope that. Do something with it. Make it interesting. Make it a brand. Make it a hashtag. Labor Day Rematch is just lame. There's no life there. So I hope that we get that. And hopefully we get some upgrades to Commonwealth Stadium, especially with a Grey Cup potentially coming there in the next few years, which again, we'll talk about a little bit later on in the show.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Bernie Marino is looking out for himself, not us. Marino is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Marino has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
JC, we neglected to talk about Hamilton's impressive win over the Toronto Argonauts in the Labor Day Classic in last week's episode, which led to a number of complaints from fans in Steeltown, which admittedly were probably warranted. We should have got to the Ticats last week. After the Argonauts lost to the Red Blacks this past week, can the Ticats make the playoffs this season?
Well, I just want to say off the top, I, for one, am shocked that Hamilton fans are complaining about something. That is, I'm stunned. My jaw
it's
is on the floor.
Unlike them.
Yes. I know, right? They're usually so friendly. No. It's all in good fun. We love the passionate fans in Steeltown. But Hamilton's not making the playoffs this year. I'm sorry. Is it statistically possible still? Absolutely. Was I impressed with how they play against the Argonauts? Yes, I was. I thought Bo Levi Mitchell was tremendous in that game. Some of those throws were absolutely jaw-dropping. But they're not making the playoffs. They are clearly the fourth team in the East Division, even with the Argos floundering the last 2 weeks. And frankly, I would take everybody in the West over them. As much as I don't believe in the Calgary Stampeders, I still think that they have more pieces than the Hamilton Tiger Cats. I think the statistical probability that they can claw into that third playoff spot in the East Division and not get superseded by a crossover in the process is almost impossible. It's infinitesimal, the chances that they'll make the postseason. Steeltown, they need to start looking towards 2025 and where this team can get in the future, because you need to add a little bit more talent here.
I think this podcast is its most compelling when we disagree and can debate topics. However, I am not going to take the Hamilton Tiger Cats make the playoffs angle, because I don't think that they're going to make the playoffs. I don't think that the chances are 0%, but I think the chances are not much higher than 0%. Now, they got a break, right, with the Argonauts laying an egg against the Ottawa Redblacks, as we've discussed. Toronto now 6-6. Before this past week, they actually had a game in hand on Toronto. They're now even at 12 games apiece. Hamilton at 3-9, Toronto at 6-6. That means, and the Ticats, by the way, by virtue of their two wins over Toronto, have the season series. So they just have to be three games better than Toronto for the rest of the year in order to make the playoffs, right, and get that third spot in the East Division. And there's also a game between these two games, between these two teams scheduled for September 20th. So they will do battle one more time. That is obviously a great opportunity for the Ticats. They already have the season series, but to get within those three games. The issue is Toronto is at BC this week. They probably lose that game. I don't know. We'll see. They've got Hamilton. Then they have Montreal. They go to Winnipeg. They host Ottawa. They go to Edmonton. That's a tough schedule. But if they win, let's even just four of those games, if they go 4-2, there's no way for Hamilton to make the playoffs. If they go 3-3, Hamilton has to go 6-0, right? If they go even 2-4, again, tough schedule. If you go 2-4, that means Hamilton has to go 5-1. Hamilton's schedule, they've got Ottawa. They have to go to Toronto. They have to go to BC. It's tough. They host Winnipeg. Well, they beat Winnipeg at home the last 2 years. They host Calgary. Okay, that's a good matchup. Then they go to Ottawa. And you figure, okay, Ottawa's tough, but maybe by week 21, Ottawa has nothing to play for. They've clinched second place, presumably. So the Ticats' schedule's easier. Maybe that gives you some hope. Again, there's a head-to-head matchup still. That might give you some hope. But the Argonauts have such a lead at this point. The Ticats have dug themselves a massive hole. Credit to them for winning on Labor Day. I'm sure Ticats fans were thrilled with that. In a way, that's almost like a mini Grey Cup for that team, beating the Toronto Argonauts in the Labor Day Classic, especially in such a tough year for the Tabbies. But barring a, I wouldn't say a miracle, but barring a, we'll call it, remarkable effort, I don't think that the Hamilton Tiger Cats can make the playoffs, but this is the CFL. Crazier things have happened.
The BC Lions have now won two straight games over the top two teams in the CFL, with Nathan Rourke at the helm as Vernon Adams Jr. is fast returning to 100% healthy. Meanwhile, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers have won five in a row after knocking off the Riders in back-to-back games. With both teams now 7-6, which one do you see as the favorite to win the West Division?
I think that the Winnipeg Blue Bombers run has been very impressive here. And I think that the grit, the veteran prowess that this team has had for the last many years has been on full display. With that being said, there's only one answer to this question, and that's the BC Lions. When you look at the remaining schedule for these two teams, they both got five games. They've got identical 7-6 records. And Winnipeg does have the advantage of owning the season series, which is why they're currently in first, BC's in second, despite having matching records. This is the remaining schedule for both teams. BC is at home four of their five games. They host Toronto. They host Hamilton. They host Calgary. They travel to Saskatchewan. And then they host Montreal. Montreal's a tough team, but they're probably going to have their playoff spot wrapped up by the end of the year. Hosting Toronto, that's a tough road trip for them. Hosting Hamilton, that's a tough road trip for them, right? That's a long way to travel from Southern Ontario all the way to Vancouver. Hosting Calgary I don't know if you've watched a Calgary Stampeders game lately. That should be a very winnable game. Going to Saskatchewan is tough, but going to Saskatchewan late in the year is probably the best time to go, because that team could very well, potentially, by week 19, be out of playoff contention. I'm not saying they will be, but it's a possibility. They might have nothing to play for. And if it's a cold day and there's nothing to play for in Saskatchewan, that stadium's going to be half empty. So the BC Lions schedule here, I would say, is light. Winnipeg, only two more home games. We all know that Princess Auto Stadium is a very tough place to play. They only have two more games at home. They have to go to Edmonton after this upcoming bye. Edmonton, on paper, with their record of 5-8, is bad. But guess what? The Edmonton Elks are playing really good football right now. Edmonton then travels to Winnipeg, so they've got a home and home with a very tough Elks team. They have to go to Hamilton. Hamilton, as we've discussed, not a top team, but Steeltown, never an easy place to play. They host Toronto, a team that might still be fighting for their playoff lives. And then they go to Montreal to finish the season. And again, that game is probably not as scary, because by week 21, the Alouettes likely don't have anything to play for, though that remains to be seen. Only two home games. BC has four. BC has easier opponents. To me, the BC Lions, with two quarterbacks, right, who are starting level, Nathan Rourke starting to turn the corner. Vernon Adams Jr. was the front runner for MOP when he got hurt. That, to me, inspires a lot more confidence. And Zach Kolaris, who, though he played a very good game in the Banjo Bowl, is still not at the level we've seen in the past. And now there's no change of pace with Chris Streveler likely being out for the season. Like, strength of schedule, quarterback, whatever you want to look at, every advantage right now is pointing towards the BC Lions.
Well, there is one advantage that the Winnipeg Blue Bombers have, and that is they've got the tiebreak, right? They're in first place now for the reason, because they have the season series against the BC Lions. But when you lay out the schedule as you have, Hodge, it's pretty easy to see where the Lions could pick up that additional victory to put themselves over the top and steal first place away from Winnipeg. I think they have to be the favorites. And you talk about the quarterback situations. Do I hear a wild statistic? Through this season, how many 300-yard passing games does Zach Kolaris have?
I think it's zero.
It's actually two. So,
okay.
Yeah, you're not giving him quite enough credit, but it's two. That's the worst of all starting quarterbacks in the CFL. Do you know how many Nathan Rourke has through four games?
Three?
Also two.
Oh, okay.
Chad Kelly, who has played three games, has three already. And he is above Zach Kolaris. So that passing attack still has not figured it out. Brady Oliveira, of course, still gets it done on the ground, is an effective check down option. He runs that offense, but there's something off with Kolaris' game this year. He leads the CFL in interceptions as well at this point in the season. I don't trust that Winnipeg offense to get it done. I think their defense is spectacular, but at some point they are going to stumble again unless they can figure out how to throw the football effectively down the field. And early on in the year, you were saying, okay, it's young receivers. They're missing the guys who, you know, generate their offense in Dalton Schoen and Kenny Lawler. And yes, Schoen's still gone, but Lawler's back, right? We expected the passing attack to take this huge leap forward with Lawler available and Kolaris to get comfortable again, and it just hasn't happened. Meanwhile, in BC, it looks like Rourke has turned the corner. Yes, he had three interceptions last week. Two of those were deflected. I thought it was even better than how he played the week before. He was in control, moving the football effectively. Got Alexander Hollins involved, which is huge because he's been terrible as of late. He looked really, really good in that game. And William Stanback is right up there right now with how Brady Oliveira is playing, right? They are two powerhouse backs in the West. So you can't even say right now that the Winnipeg Blue Bombers are a more physical team like you've been able to say in the past, because William Stanback has proven he will run through your damn face, right? So these Lions are a better version of themselves right now. Do they still have the flaws that put them on that five-game losing streak? Absolutely. But when you put Matthew Betts on the defense and you get Rourke firing on all cylinders and Stanback's getting the help he healthy dose of carries, this can be a very dangerous team that covers up for a lot of the lack of depth in the back end.
Yeah, Kenny Lawler had his best game of the year in the Banjo Bowl, 6 catches, 64 yards, and a touchdown. But those are still not like Kenny Lawler numbers. You know what I mean? Like when you talk to people in the league, they talk about Kenny Lawler like he is a one of one, right? Mm-hmm. He is the guy who can separate most consistently, who can beat man coverage most consistently, who has the widest catch radius. Like they speak about Kenny Lawler glowingly. That's no disrespect to any other receiver in the CFL, but they consider him in a tier by himself and then the next tier of guys like Alexander Hollins or whoever you want to throw in there. That's not been very evident through these first 5 games. I do think that Kenny Lawler can find that next gear, but you're right, JC. This passing game has not been what it's been for the last while for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. And with the weather turning, I do think that their run game will be their strength. But yeah, you can't look at this situation and say that Winnipeg is the front runner to win the West, even with the advantage that they've got in the season series. I think Winnipeg deserves a lot of credit for digging themselves out of a giant hole to start the year, right? This team was once 2-6. But I think first place right now, it's not impossible, but I think first place is probably not going to be where they finish. I think they're going to finish second. I think BC is going to finish first, barring a surprising, we'll call it, final 6 weeks of the season here. JC, we just wrapped up a great week of U Sports action featuring some key rivalry games in Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Quebec. Which of these games stand out the most to you?
Well, there's some great results here, but only one game, when I saw the score line flash across my phone screen, made my jaw drop. And that was the Alberta rivalry matchup that you referred to off the top there, Hodge. The Calgary Dinos defeating the number 5 ranked Alberta Golden Bears 36-22. And if you haven't followed U Sports football for a while, you may be saying, well, what's the big deal? Aren't the Calgary Dinos a powerhouse? They have not been. Not for the last 5 or 6 years. They have been the definitive basement team in the Canada West, the team that everybody else has been walking over. And they come out in this game against a very, very good Alberta Golden Bears team, a team that just knocked off the UBC Thunderbirds last week, who went to the Vanier Cup in 2023, and they get 3 first-half pick sixes. They absolutely take it to them right off the start with those defensive plays. You never see that in a football game, and it causes a massive upset. Canada West is always good for some chaos, Hodge, but this one was surprising even for that conference.
Yeah, I almost wonder if Saturday, there's no way to possibly quantify this statistic, but I almost wonder if you look at just Saturday, September 7th as a date, if that was the date on which in history the most pick sixes were thrown in Canadian football, because you had multiple at the CFL level, you had multiple at the U Sports level. And yes, JC, that was a shocking result. I want to talk about another shocking result, which I know you're not bringing up because you're soft on your alma mater.
Oh,
which was the University of Manitoba Bisons. True, but this loss was worse. 33-10, the Manitoba Bisons went into UBC, won in Vancouver for the first time in 11 years. The Thunderbirds opened a 10-0 lead early, and then the Bisons poured it on, outscoring them 33-0 down the stretch. Jackson Tuchinski, who could be a bit of a dark horse for the Heck Crichton Trophy this year, 286 yards through the air, 61 on the ground, accounted for 3 total touchdowns. Braden Stubbs slung the rock for 105 yards and a score. I know that UBC, a team that went to the Vanier Cup this year, or this past year, was expected to have a little bit of a decline in 2024. I don't think anybody expected them to open the year 0-2. Which is wild. And kudos to the Manitoba Bisons and Regina Rams, 2 teams that I don't think anybody were picking to win the Canada West this year, the only 2 2-0 teams. The other game I want to highlight, JC, is the Montreal Caravans at Laval Rouge Or. This is one of the best rivalries in football. I've had the good fortune of attending this very game last year. I've also been at the Labor Day Classic in Regina. I've been at the Banjo Bowl in Winnipeg. This game in Laval, it's a little bit of a smaller scale, but it's very close to being on par with those games, and the atmosphere is better than most CFL games. If you ever get the chance to go to Quebec City for this game, it's worth booking an entire trip. Like, if you're going to do Quebec City once in your life, book your trip so that it overlaps when the Caravans come to town. It happens once a year. It's well worth the trip. The Rouge Or got out to a 15-0 lead as Arnaud Desjardins hit Olivier Cool for two touchdown passes. By the way, Olivier Cool has to be one of the best names in the history of collegiate football anywhere in the world. The Caravan came fighting back, took a 22-20 lead in the fourth quarter following a touchdown from Lucas Dembele from 61 yards out. However, Felipe Forteza, who's not Laval's usual kicker, he's actually a linebacker, came on with 18 seconds left and hit what I believe is an RSEQ record, 53-yard field goal. There were 20,903 fans at Stade Telus for this game, a record attendance for the Rouge Or. I know they went into standing room only. I don't know if the fire inspector was around. Hopefully they weren't, because I don't think this was legal. But I would love to see how many more people they could pour in for this one. This is a place you have to be if you're in Quebec City. And again, if you're traveling to Quebec City, check out this game. But at some point, if you're passionate about Canadian football, which obviously you are if you're listening to this podcast, you have to get to this game at some point.
Bucket list item for me, Hodge, and I was so jealous that you got to take part in it last year. It's something I have to do at some point.
And I would also say the same, by the way, I wrote this in my post-gamer from the Banjo Bowl. I would say the same thing about Labor Day in Regina. I would say the same thing about Banjo Bowl in Winnipeg. It doesn't matter where you're from. It doesn't matter which team you cheer for, if you're a Bomber fan, a Rider fan, or if you cheer for any other team. Just go. Enjoy the atmosphere. Enjoy the pomp and circumstance. If you've never been to Regina, if you've never been to Winnipeg, I'm a lifelong Winnipegger. Well, I'm a lifelong Manitoban. Lived in Winnipeg most of my life, was born here. I appreciate that Winnipeg is not the most beautiful city in Canada, but in the summertime, it is a nice place to be. We got baseball. We got lots of other stuff. And the same thing I think is true of Regina. This year's Labor Day was the first time I've been to Regina late summer, and I actually thought Regina was quite nice to visit. So if you're from outside of the prairies, book a trip at some point. Late summer, come to a Labor Day Classic, come to a Banjo Bowl. It's a great time. Doesn't matter about who you're cheering for. Just the atmosphere. Incredible. It's now time for Hodge's Heritage Moment. On this day in 2007, Sean Swisham kicked his first game-winning field goal in the NFL, making a 39-yard attempt to lead Washington in a win over the Miami Dolphins. The Wallaceburg, Ontario native spent 11 seasons in the NFL, primarily with Washington and the Pittsburgh Steelers, finishing his career 211 of 251 on field goals. That's a percentage of 84.1, with a long of 53 yards. JC, is it a shame that we never got to see Swisham play in the CFL?
I always want the best Canadian players to spend some time in the CFL, but I don't think Sean Swisham is crying over this one. I think he can mop up any tears he may have with the millions of dollars he received from his extensive NFL career. It's great to see Canadians have success at that level, and Swisham was part of a wave of kickers that got it done in that era before this current wave of skill position players really took over. At that time, guys like him, guys like Mitch Berger, they were our Canadian representatives south of the border.
I'm going to info dump on the 2004 CFL draft for a moment. So Swisham was a pick in 2004. This was back when the CFL allowed redshirt juniors to be drafted in the draft. Mm-hmm. So in other words, guys who could still go back and play a year or two more of college, potentially down south. He was a third-round pick to the Ottawa Renegades, obviously never played for them. Four picks later, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers take John Ryan out of the University of Regina, a guy who played in the NFL forever. Mm. And then five picks after that, in round four, the Ottawa Renegades take out of the University of California long snapper LP Latiker, who went ahead and played
for the Dallas Cowboys.
Latu sir.
Oh, fair. I'm not French. I'm not good at that. So the point is, in the span of literally 9 picks, you had like 3 10-year NFLers taken, and all as special teams guys, which is wild. Also, not long after that, out of the University of Saskatchewan, receiver Chad Rempel was taken, who ended up having an excellent career, like a 20-year career almost, as a long snapper, who also had a cup of coffee with the Chicago Bears in 2014. So if you count him, right, as even a short-term NFL guy, that's three long-time NFL special teams guys, four guys who at least had a cup of coffee as special teamers in the NFL going in this one. This draft happened 20 years ago. And when you look at it, it's pretty clear why the Ottawa Renegades were what they were. When you look at some of these picks, they took Abi Khan second overall. That's a good pick. They took David Azzie, receiver out of the University of Ottawa, with the third overall pick. That did not work out. And in the second round, they took Christian Leibel-Cote, a offensive lineman out of New Hampshire. He doesn't even have a Wikipedia page, so I don't know what came of him, but it was not a good career. Azzie only spent 1 year with the Renegades. He spent most of his career in Toronto or Saskatchewan. So when you draft like that, I'm not surprised this franchise did not work out. It's now time for the 3-minute drill. New Edmonton Elks owner Larry Thompson was making the rounds during this past week's game on a cart when he suddenly drove into the Calgary Stampeders bench. How do you explain that?
Well, we're still getting to know Mr. Thompson since he purchased the Elks, and you know, he's not exactly a riveting public speaker, so it's hard to tell if this was comedy or senility here, but I certainly love it. Do you think, Hodge, do you think Dave Dickinson, when he saw that fire truck coming down the sideline, did he think about stepping in front of it? Because I'm not sure if you can fire coaches if they're on the IR. Is it like veteran players?
Maybe. I'll say this. I thought this was the best old person in the CFL moment since the fight between Joe Kapp and Angela Mosca in 2011. So this is a new 13-year high for Larry Thompson. Well done.
Darian Durant said on 620 CKRM that he retired back in 2018 partly because an unnamed coach in Winnipeg didn't respect the fact that he just welcomed his first child. Do you believe that?
I mean, I'm not going to sit here and call Darian Durant a liar. I know that Winnipeg has repeatedly given players games off, in some cases multiple games off, after the birth of a child or the death of a family member. So I know that Mike O'Shea in that building, and I'm not saying Mike O'Shea was the coach Darian Durant spoke to, but I know that they do have a family atmosphere in Winnipeg. But obviously Darian Durant didn't agree. The BC Lions put left tackle Jarrell Broxton on their 6-game injured list this past week. How big of a loss is he?
It's a significant loss. Now, I don't believe he's going to be out for the whole 6 games. I think he'll be back sooner than that. But Broxton is their best offensive lineman. And David Neville, who replaced him in this game, is not good. Just period. Full stop. Not good. They got some other options that are getting healthy and Chris Sluger that they can plug in there if needed. But Broxton needs to come back for this team to be at their best. The Montreal Alouettes released Canadian kicker Michael Domagala from their practice roster. Is there a team in the CFL that should sign him?
The Edmonton Elks should sign Michael Domagala. I don't think that, you know, credit to Boris Beattie. He had a nice bounce back game in the Labor Day rematch, which, as stated earlier, should be called something else. But I think when you look at the postseason, you're going to need a little bit more security. If nothing else, Domagala should be able to push Boris Beattie and Dean Faithful. The Calgary Stampeders and Edmonton Elks have reportedly placed bids to host the 2026 Grey Cup. Which city would you rather go to for the CFL's championship game?
It's Edmonton, without question. We've already talked on this podcast about the differences between Commonwealth, which could use a spruce up, and McMahon, which could use dynamite. But just from my own personal perspective, I've been in that McMahon Stadium press box. I don't know how they manage Grey Cups there. I don't want to find out, because that is some tight stinky old confines, and I don't want to be jammed up against you for the whole game in there, Hodge. The Edmonton Elks had 32,144 fans on hand for their win over the Calgary Stampeders in their Labor Day Classic rematch. Does that mean their attendance woes are finally behind them?
No, but it's a great step in the right direction. And part of the reason I say that is because last year, this team had a reported attendance of 32,000 for this game. And I know that Andrew Hoskins, who is there on the scene for Three Down Nation, said that, wow, this is the most people I've seen here in years. That could very well be the case because it was pretty clear from Edmonton's financial report last year that they were papering the house with free tickets. But they also don't have the upper bowl open right now. So it's possible that there was 32,000 fans last year and they were just a lot more spread out and it didn't feel like as exciting of an atmosphere. So a step in the right direction, 100%. A fixed problem? No, it's going to take longer for Edmonton to get back to solid crowds all the time, which, by the way, I think they will do, right? I think they will. They're on the right path. They'll get there. They're not there yet. The Ottawa Redblacks have placed return man Devontae Dedmon on the 6-game injured list. How big of a loss is he?
He's a significant loss. Obviously, he's one of the best return men in the CFL, but there's a trickle-down effect here because when Dedmon's not on the field, for some reason, the Redblacks get Brandon Dandridge in their return kicks, and sometimes even Adarius Pickett. And those two guys, impactful defensive starters, right? They shouldn't be doing that as a returner. And there's a risk that they could get hurt. The less they're on the field in that situation, the better. I hope the Red Blacks can find potentially another solution. I know that Jamal Morrow did a little bit of kickoff returning in this game, but he got banged up doing it, which is just more evidence why you shouldn't have your best defensive players returning your kicks. Veteran defensive back Aaron Grimes retired from the CFL as a player this past week and was named an assistant coach in Edmonton. Is that a good fit for him?
It is. Aaron Grimes, by all accounts, by all reports, is a great community guy. He's a great communicator. He's intelligent, and he was a very good player in this league for a long time. Seems like a perfect fit to join that coaching staff. Longtime CFL quarterback Kerry Joseph is mentoring number one overall NFL draft pick Caleb Williams as the QB coach of the Chicago Bears. Do you think Joseph will positively impact the rookie's season?
Yeah, he's a guy with a wealth of experience at the professional level, both in the CFL, but also, I think, interestingly, in the NFL, as a safety and a defensive player, he can provide some of that perspective to Williams. Should be noted, of course, the Bears won their season opener on Sunday. Williams, not great in his debut, only threw for 93 yards, but no turnovers, so maybe there's something there. The Alouettes have placed star receiver Austin Mack on the 6-game injured list. How big of a loss is that?
It is, but at the end of the day, if I'm the Alouettes, I just want Austin Mack for the playoffs, right? This is a team, yes, the Ottawa Redblacks are on their tail, but they also play the Redblacks two more times, and they have the first game already in the bank thanks to a early season spanking of the Ottawa Redblacks. So if I'm Montreal, I'm looking at my schedule going, I got Calgary this week, and then I have Ottawa two of my next three games. Obviously, you beat Calgary. If you win one of those two against Ottawa, you get the season series, and you've probably clinched the East Division. If not mathematically, for all intents and purposes, you've clinched. I only want Austin Mack for the postseason. I can very easily tread water without him because let's remember, this team was 9-1 before they got Austin Mack onto the field. They should be fine with him off of it for a little while. On that note, we thank you as always for listening to the Three Down Nation podcast. Please join us later this week for our picks and next week for our next episode when Justin Dunk will be back. For JC Abbott, I'm John Hodge. We'll see you next time.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
American Giant makes great clothing, T-shirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S., creating jobs in towns and cities across the country. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.